Welcome to the serial audiobook presentation of The Rider, a Galactic Football League novella. Written by Scott Sigler and Paul E. Cooley. Performed by Scott Sigler. This novel is available as an ebook for Kindle and other e-readers, or as a full-length, ad-free, unabridged audiobook from Audible, iTunes, and Amazon. Find purchase links at scottsigler.com/The Rider. Hello, junkies. Oh, I have such a cold, you guys, but the show must go on. I'm recording this episode early as I'm heading out to Denver Comic Con today, but by the time this episode comes out, Denver Comic Con will be almost finished. But if you are coming to San Diego Comic Con, I will be there. So plan on watching that schedule to see when we can say hi. And I'll have more information about my San Diego Comic-Con appearances in the weeks to come. And if you really want to spend some time with the FDO, the Director of Doom, and many other lovely junkies, then by all means, come to Sigler Fest in Vegas, October 6th and 7th. Check out the info at scottsigler.com/SiglerFest. It is the party of the year, people. Meet other junkies just like you and have an absolute ball. Vegas is one of the most affordable travel spots in the U.S. I mean, as long as you don't piss away your money gambling. But hey, you do you. So that means it's a great little vacation. And of course, the real draw, there's me. So let me get you caught up on the story, and then we're all going to sneeze together because of dinosaur dander. The rivalry between Pete and Ian eases up as Ian deals with the death of Tumult, his primary mount. It's time for a guest appearance from Becca the Recca Montane and everyone's favorite metaphor-mixing linebacker, John Tweedy. And Pete is about to have a sit-down with his stingy, contrarian, problematic team owner, Sultan the Grimy. Coming up next on The Rider, episode number 3. Sultan the Grimy's normally flat fur stood on end. Slate in color, the speckles of black and brown strands made him look as though he needed a good cleaning. Sitting in his tall, jeweled throne, the Quith leader looked down at Pete. Not for the first time, Pete wondered how the dwarf-sized sentient managed to climb up into the damn thing. The leader's three sets of antennae shook with anger. His whole body did, for that matter, making the gold and platinum bracelets on his pedipalp wrists and his thick, diamond-studded silver necklace jingle in time.
"No excuses," he said. "There are no excuses for losing a mount."
Pete stared up into Sultan's single, softball-sized eye, an eye swirling with ink splotches of black. The owner was angrier than Pete had ever seen him. "Maybe if you'd stop being such a tight ass and buy new armor, the mount would have lived," Pete said.
"Do not blame this on armor that is only 2 seasons old."
"3, Pete said. "And it's not just the mount armor, Sultan. Your riders are going to get hurt out there. The gear is beat up and it was crappy to begin with." Sultan's eyes swirled with black.
"Crappy? Yet another euphemism from you fecal-obsessed humans? It cost a substantial amount, Pete. You are going to finish the season with the armor you have. After the season, I will consider new gear."
Pete had heard the same things last season, and the season before that. There was no point in having this conversation now. The leader wasn't going to loosen the purse strings with just 2 matches left in this season.
"Now, about Ian," Sultan said. "I want answers. And don't blame the armor a second time, Pete. You saw that careless riding. The best armor in the universe wouldn't have saved our mount."
Sultan was cheap, but he wasn't stupid. He was right about the kick. "All right," Pete said. "I'll review the holos tomorrow, but I think I know what happened."
"I already know what happened."
Sultan downed a shot of junky gin.
"Ian was careless. A 500,000 credit investment. Gone."
Pete reached a hand to his head, tousled his long red hair so it would stand up more. When dealing with Sultan, he always let his hair hang free rather than tie it back in a tight ponytail. The Quith leader considered it an insult to be unkempt in his presence, which, of course, was why Pete did it. It's a violent game, Sultan. Mounts die. Sultan slammed a middle hand onto the throne's arm.
But not my mounts. You're going to fire, Ian, and you're going to do it right now.
Pete shook his head. No. The Quith stood on his throne. With the added height, he towered over Pete.
What did you say?
You heard me.
You don't tell me no, Pete.
A grin crossed the rider's face. No, sir? The leader cocked his head, his eye clearing.
That's better.
Now look, Sultan, this kid is my protege. Yes, he's a pain in the ass. Yes, he's not as good as he thinks he is. And yes, he is arrogant. But he's mine. My choice, not yours. The leader's fur settled flat. That made Pete nervous. Sultan liked to yell and scream, bang his fist, let his eye colors run wild, and when that was happening, Pete knew how to manage him. But when Sultan got calm, Pete never knew what would happen next.
I told you to fire him, Sultan said. If you don't do it, then I will.
Pete crossed his arms. Do I need to pull out my contract and show you where it says that you don't have the right to do that? The Quith leader's eye darkened.
Look at my contract, the human says. You think I can't get a lawyer to find holes in that contract?
I know I can find a lawyer to nuke mine. Is that what you want? The leader said nothing. His pettipalp smoothed the fur on his head. Sultan, come on, we built this team together, Pete said. This sport, this team. And I'm telling you, Ian is a great asset, one you would be a fool to waste.
Sultan's pettipalp fingers absently drummed a beat on his head, an oddly human gesture. Pete waited, looked around as he did. The walls of Sultan's large office were covered in Ridgeback memorabilia, a shelf of Dynalition trophies, and holopics of Bess. An entire rack contained Ridgeback shirts, mugs, ball caps, all kinds of merchandise with the Ridgeback logo, and, especially, toys. Of Bess, mostly. Stuffed T-Rex plush dolls, in both her feathered youth and her almost-grown current state. Detail-perfect plastic replicas with and without armor. Hologames, towels, jerseys, all of the merch that was gobbled up by adults and youth alike. As coverage of the league expanded, merchandise sales had grown from a minor bit of income to a steady source of revenue. If the league survived long enough, kept expanding, Pete knew merchandise might soon bring in more than the gate receipts of the live matches themselves. Sultan had the largest office in the stadium complex. It had once belonged to the owner of the cricket team, but when Sultan bought the stadium, he'd moved that owner down the hall to a smaller office.
Fine,
the leader said finally. But he's not getting paid for today's match.
What?
He lost a mount. Ian didn't finish the match. Therefore, he doesn't get paid.
He gets paid, Pete said. Period. Last week, he got eaten in the first round by that Sklorno Skitch. Damn, those are nasty creatures. He didn't finish that match, and he got paid. This is no different.
Sultan shook his head. His eyes swirled with dark red and black.
It's very different. Ian was out of the game, but his mount wasn't dead, Pete.
Pete sighed. I don't think you're being logical.
I'm being practical,
Sultan said.
Acolobator embryos aren't free, and I need to activate another one. Unless you want to use the three grown ones we have and then forget about the species?
Pete's jaw clenched. No, he wasn't done with that species. Speed kills, and the Killies were fast as hell. They were also fragile. More would be lost down the road, and it took 2 years to grow one to competition size. Maybe Sultan was right. Maybe getting docked to game's pay would get Ian to pay attention. Lord knew little else did.
All right, Pete said.
The Quith leader shook the bracelets on his wrist in annoyance.
as if I need your acceptance before I make a decision. Now, how are you going to replace Tumult?
Replace? There is no replace. Sultan paused. His eye cleared.
Put aside your sentimentality, Pete,
the leader said.
You know what I mean.
Sultan was an ass. He shouted if he didn't get what he wanted. He threatened. He bullied. And in most ways, he acted more like a petulant human child than a Quith leader. But sometimes, he seemed capable of concern. Even empathy. Pete shrugged. Ian worked the other three killies last night. He says they're not quite at competition level. I think it's time to put in Yar.
The Zongwen Long?
Sultan's one eye glanced at the rack of toys.
Not the Triceratops?
The trike. It always comes back to the trike, because you know we'll sell a buttload of merch if that one is in the starting lineup. Jerry isn't ready, Pete said. Sultan leaned forward in his throne.
Are you going to let him follow his mother around forever? Just how long are you planning to keep the sport waiting?
We lost 500,000 with Tumult, as you pointed out. We've already got 3 times that into Jerry's development. Far more, if you count what we spent on his mother. You run Jerry out early, before he's combat seasoned, and he could die in the first match. I'm telling you, Sultan, he's not ready.
At some point in the very near future, he better be ready. I didn't spend all those credits on Bayman's experiment, just for not one, but 2 Triceratops to sit in a paddock.
Soon, Pete said.
Pete ran the team, but Sultan bankrolled it. And if one thing held true throughout the galaxy and throughout history, it was the sentient who paid the bills who got to make the final decision.
Just a little more time, Sultan. I promise.
The leader's eye darkened again. Seconds passed, with neither sentient saying a word. Sultan's pedipalps crossed themselves.
Commissioner Gessford called me a few minutes ago,
he said.
She yelled at me for your post-fight match. Did you hear me, Pete? She yelled at me.
Pete nodded.
Sorry about that, Chief.
I swear, that woman does not know her place.
Not at all, Pete said. But she's doing her best, I think.
Sultan waved a pedipalp hand in annoyance.
It's like she doesn't understand where her salary comes from. If it wasn't for the owners, she'd still be making those awful movies.
Pete said nothing. Sultan could posture all he wanted, but they both knew the truth. If it wasn't for Gessford's tireless work, the owners who paid her would have lost their investments long ago.
She's waiting for you,
Sultan said.
At the Ruffland Hyatt.
Pete's stomach pinched tight, and a coppery feeling flooded his chest. As if this day and night hadn't been long enough already. Pete had hoped for a night of drinking with his favorite football player, maybe catch Gessford's wrath a few days, or even weeks, down the road. Sultan pressed a button on his throne's armrest. Heavy G-Mail walked into the room. Pete didn't recognize him. Must be Sultan's latest goon. Unlike Doc Bayman, who looked like a muscular, oversized human woman, the heavy G-males bore a striking resemblance to long-armed, hairless, muscle-bound gorillas. This man's left thigh alone probably weighed more than Pete did. The man wore an expensive suit, courtesy of Sultan's deep pockets. He didn't even bother to walk fully upright. Scuffed, callous knuckles pressed against the floor as he shuffled in.
Yes, Shamakath,
the heavy G said.
Miller, Pete has a meeting in Ruffland. See that he gets there and returns to the ranch in one piece.
Yes, Shamakath,
Miller said, and bowed his head. He pointed to the door.
If you would, Pete.
The rider turned his back to the throne and left the office. Pete stepped out of the cab. The streets of Rufflin were still thick with people celebrating the Ridgeback's win.
Most were long gone, but the last of them would be partying until well into the night. People walked down the sidewalks, laughing, drinking, and heading to the various bars. Clothed in the orange and black Ionath Kraken's football jersey, Pete was a signpost for Abnormal. A few people recognized him, started to point, to nudge their friends. Pete hurried to the Oasis. He didn't mind being recognized, didn't mind signing autographs, but this wasn't the time for that. The Oasis facade was made of local timber and filigreed with the logos of the hometown teams. The Colonial Sigil, a simple circle with a cowboy hat and ancient six guns crossing one another, covered the left side of the facade. Until Dino Lishan set up shop in Rodina, it had covered the entire facade. After the first Dino Lishan match, the owner had torn the right side down and replaced it with Bess's growling, predatory face. Pete looked up at the wood carving of his big friend, suddenly wishing he was back on the ranch with her. The Oasis was loud and crowded. Humans and heavy G sentients wearing cowboy hats, boots, and hemp jeans stood at the bar or crowded the small wooden tables. An overweight human bartender with a long red beard waved to get Pete's attention, then pointed to the restaurant entrance.
"Company's waiting for you," the bartender said. "You're even fancier than I thought."
"Thanks, Charlie," Pete said. Pete tipped an imaginary hat and headed towards the translucent divider between the two halves of the Oasis. He felt eyes following his move. A few tourists started forward like they wanted to come and talk to him, but the regulars knew not to bother him. When Pete came to the Oasis, he was treated like any other sentient. Except, of course, for the free drinks fans frequently bought for him. The cloud of nanites that made up the divider spread as he walked through them. As he came out on the other side, the noise of the bar was replaced by the sounds of quiet conversations, the occasional laugh, and the clinking of dinnerware. The scent of roasted meat made his stomach growl. He blinked his eyes and scanned the tables. Two huge sentients and a lithe, dark-haired woman sat in heavy wooden chairs around a red checkered table. The three were engaged in conversation. The largest at the table was John Tweedy, linebacker for the Ionath Krakens. 6.5 feet tall, seemingly almost as wide, he threw back his head, laughed, and then slammed his huge, meaty fist on the table. He wore a specially tailored Ridgeback shirt, the kind patterned to resemble rider armor, complete with colors and Pete's number 5 on the left chest. His girlfriend, Kraken's fullback Becca the Recca Montaigne, sat next to him. She was a heavy G woman, the same height as John, and even outweighed him by 10 kilos. Not that Pete had memorized the Kraken's roster or anything like that. Rebecca wore a plain dress with an orange and black brooch in the shape of the Kraken's logo. The smallest sentient at the table, a normal-sized human woman who looked like a fragile doll next to the two football stars, was Rachel Gesford, Dino Lishan commissioner. She seemed to be the exact opposite of Montaigne, slender and elegant to Montaigne's muscular and athletic. Gesford's dress, a spectacle of gold leaf and diamonds to Montaigne's simple outfit. There was another opposite comparison. Gesford's heyday as an actress was well behind her, while Montaigne, only 20 years old, was an all-pro fullback just beginning what promised to be a long, dominant career. Even though Gesford's prime was years past, she was still beautiful, drop-dead gorgeous, and the obsession of many a rich man. Compared to Becca the Recca Montaigne, however, Pete wouldn't have given the commissioner a second glance. An actress was good and fine, but an athlete of Becca's caliber? Now that was sexy on a level the commissioner couldn't hope to reach. And of course, the commissioner had glommed onto the football stars. They had come to see Pete and the Riders, not Gesford, but she never missed a chance to let the paparazzi see her with anyone even remotely famous. But no Quentin Barnes. Pete had heard Barnes was bringing trench warfare singer Somalia Midori as his date. No sign of that beauty either. Pete ran his fingers through his long ponytail, took a deep breath, and walked toward the table, a forced smile on his face. Gesford saw him first.
"About damn time," she said.
Tweedy stood up in a rush, almost knocking the table over.
"Pete!"
The huge human bent slightly and offered his huge paw. Pete placed his tiny hand in Tweety's, half afraid the football player would, in pure overwhelming excitement, accidentally break every bone in Pete's hand. The handshake was gentler than Pete expected.
"You remembered," he said.
"I said I was sorry about that," scrolled across John's forehead, that strange, unnerving display of his full-body tattoo. The big linebacker laughed.
"Can't have the league MVP out of the picture before the playoffs hit, am I right?"
When Pete had first met John Tweedy the season before, the linebacker's over-exuberant handshake had sprained Pete's wrist.
"We don't really have playoffs," Pete said. "There's only 10 teams right now, so we have a championship tournament. The top 4 teams make it in."
John shrugged.
"Tournament, schmurnament, playoffs, schmayoffs. 6 of 1, 1.5 dozen of the other. What matters is that final single elimination goodness. Guano a guano until one team raises the belt."
Pete laughed. "Guano a guano? Do you mean a mano a mano?"
"Same difference,"
John said. He looked at Pete's jersey and his face lit up all over again. He patted his own shirt at the left chest, where it showed Pete's number 5.
"Hey! I'm wearing your number, you're wearing mine. We're jersey buddies."
It still freaked Pete out a little. John Tweedy, star linebacker and one of the most well-known athletes in the galaxy, was excited to see him, like Pete was a real sports celebrity or something. Pete looked over at the block of a woman standing next to John.
"Miss Montaigne," he said, then gave a flourishing bow. "I am utterly delighted."
The black-haired, heavy G woman stood and reached out for a handshake. Pete took the hand, turned it, gently kissed the top of it.
"You are truly a vision," he said with a smile.
Montaigne's face flushed. John laughed and clapped his hands.
"Oh, watch out for Pete, Becca. He's a real smoothie smooth."
Gesford gestured to the table's open chair.
"Pete, why don't you sit and we'll all order dinner? I'm crashing your party a little bit, but I don't think John minds. Do you, John?"
"Oh, hell no,"
the linebacker said.
"I love to eat."
Judging by the size of the man, Pete wondered if he did anything but eat besides play football. Gesford had a fake smile firmly planted on her face. She wanted to rip Pete's head off, but wasn't about to miss a chance for the biggest star in her league to sit down with 2 superstars of the GFL who had come here to watch him play and let everyone in the restaurant see it as well. Gesford undoubtedly had a photographer around somewhere. Pictures of Pete hanging with Tweedy and Montaigne would soon be on all the sports sites. But that same smile said something else. It said, "Eat and be a good boy, because we still have to settle up later."
"Hey, Commissioner," Pete said,
knowing he should leave it alone, but unable to stop himself.
"Want to borrow my Galaxy Atlas?"
Becca laughed, covered her mouth with her hands. Gasford's lips pressed into a thin line, and her face flushed red, at least as much as Pete could tell through all the makeup.
"An Atlas,"
John said. He looked at Becca.
"What's Pete talking about?"
"Before the match, Commissioner Gesford introduced the Ridgebacks as being from Rodina," Becca said, "instead of being from Wilson 6. It's no big deal, John, just a slip of the tongue confusing the planet Rodina with the city of New Rodina."
John's brow wrinkled as he tried to process the info. Gesford's fake smile returned.
"Yes, a slip of the tongue. A former actress should be able to memorize her lines. Maybe the years are catching up with me."
John still hadn't gotten it. Becca looked uncomfortable. Gesford just looked pissed. Pete climbed into the chair. So much for teasing the most powerful person in Dinolition. A human waiter came over. John started ordering. When John ordered, it took a while. After he'd picked out 7 appetizers and was thinking over his 3rd entree, Pete exchanged a glance with Becca. She smiled.
"John gets a little hungry."
Pete nodded and winked.
"So do I."
Rebecca blushed again and laughed, flattered by Pete's subtle overture.
"John warned me about you," she said.
John looked up from his ordering.
"Is Pete hitting on you already?"
scrolled across his forehead. Becca nodded.
"Told ya,"
John said, and went back to ordering. Becca smiled. Pete was entranced. "I've never watched a Dinolition match before," she said. "You were awesome." Now it was Pete's turn to blush. Was the Rekka complimenting him? "We could have done better," he said. "We lost a mount. We need to work on our fundamentals." Something changed in Becca's eyes. Pete knew he had just connected with her. With that one expression, he felt overwhelmed, knowing that an athlete of her caliber had, for whatever reason, accepted him as an equal. "Fundamentals," Becca said. "That's what it's all about. Awful sorry you lost a teammate." A teammate. She didn't refer to tumult as a mount or a ride. Pete knew he had no shot with this woman, but that didn't stop him from falling a little in love with her right then and there. He wondered if John had any idea how lucky he was to have her on his arm. John finally handed the menu back to the Heavy G server. The sentient took everyone else's orders, bowed, and headed for the kitchen.
"That should do it,"
John said as he finished his beer. Pete shook his head.
"Oh, John, you ordered almost as much beefalo as old Bess eats."
John slapped him on the back.
"Yep, watching you guys out there gave me one hell of an appetite."
They made small talk while waiting for the next round of drinks and the meal. Pete thought of making another overture at Becca, but that simple comment of hers, "Sorry about your teammate," had taken away any ability to see her as a romantic conquest. Becca Montaigne was the kind of woman a man courted, not just hit on. The waiter returned with drinks and appetizers. A stout for Pete, gimlet for Guessford, and more beers for both GFL players. John dug into his bowl of Newton oysters, fresh in from the net colony. He offered one to Rebecca, who slurped the gray flesh into her mouth and smiled.
"So, Pete, do you live here in Roughland?" "I have a home outside town," Pete said, "just a few kilometers from the team ranch." "Oh, please tell me Bess doesn't live with you."
John laughed and slapped the table, a long shred of sautéed lentil ligament hanging out the side of his mouth. It dripped juice, most of which was caught by the napkin tucked into the collar of his shirt. Pete grinned.
"No, Miss Montaigne, Bess lives at the ranch."
"Becca," she said.
"My name is Becca."
Pete blushed.
"Sure," he said.
Guessford sipped at her gimlet.
"Pete's place is nice," she said, "but I'm sure if it was large enough, Bess would come home with him every night." "Of course she would," Pete said. "She's housebroken and everything. Or is it that she breaks houses? I always get those confused."
Everyone laughed.
"What's Bess like?" Rebecca asked. "I mean, when she's not eating other riders, of course."
Pete smiled.
"Bess is my girl. She's the only living dinosaur of her kind. Sometimes I think she knows it. Regardless, as terrifying as she looks, she's playful and careful. You could put a child in her pen, and the child would be fine."
Becca shook her head.
"Hard to believe something so big could be so docile. You really mean to tell me they're never dangerous?" "I didn't say that," Pete said. "Some dinos show extreme aggression. We want that on the pitch, obviously, but off of it that causes problems."
"I can imagine," Becca said. "John told me the dinos were bred to be pets."
Guessford rolled her eyes.
"Hardly. The tech was originally brought about to create watch animals for the super wealthy. That didn't work out so well. While the dinos are manageable on a ranch and in the arena, they have to have an outlet for their natural aggression. When they weren't given that outlet, they made one, often with tragic results. There were incidents. Some animals were destroyed, others were sold. Lawsuits forced Buckland De-Extinction Group, the company that created the tech and raised the first generation, out of business. I was part of an investors group that bought up their tech, their embryos, and a few dozen animals. We contacted other races to see if they wanted to showcase some of their native primitive species, and that's how we started Dinolition."
Pete had been brought in shortly after that. To think that because Salton had once owned a failed traveling circus, that Pete was now wining and dining with two GFL players? It boggled the imagination. John stabbed a fork at the plate of one of his appetizers, came back with a deep-fried bull testicle.
Pete's got the only T-Rex in the league, he said. That's why Pete is a badass.
Gessford sipped from her glass.
Bess is the reason the Ridgebacks are the most popular team in Dinolition.
Pete feigned a hurt look.
And I thought it was my good looks.
Becca laughed, delighted. When the server brought the entrees, the table couldn't hold them all. The waiter had to drag over a second table, which he set up near John. Four roasted beefalo legs sat atop large plates of sautéed sweetbreads, fried liver, Rodina haggis, grilled flank steak, succulent prime rib, and tender strip. John rubbed his hands together.
This'll do for round one.
Pete shook his head. It was going to be a long meal. The large palm hit him on the back again. Pete tried not to flinch.
Man, when you hit the Beast Rider with your hammer, that was awesome. I mean, super mega awesome.
The big human was already on his fifth mag can of beer and his third shot of tequila. Pete felt a little tipsy, but he was beginning to think that was due to a mild concussion from all of John's friendly backslapping.
Thanks, John,
Pete said, and took another sip from his beer. After dinner, at John's urging, they had left the restaurant and returned to the raucous environment of the bar proper. John pounded his huge fist on the bar top.
Barkeep, we need another round of shots.
He slapped Pete on the back again, hard enough that Pete wondered if Tumult wouldn't be the only one that day with a cracked vertebra. The local band, Reggie's Roadkill Rockers, fired up their instruments. The building vibrated with the noise. The shots arrived. John slammed his, then roared in delight. He screamed often, intensely, and usually for no apparent reason.
Say, Petey, John said. You're all famous and rich now. You told me you didn't know who your parents were. You ever want to find out?
Pete shook his head. He didn't know, and he didn't want to know.
Because I know a guy, John said. Badass private investigator. He's my friend. He finds lost parents and whatnot. Although, you gotta watch out for him a little, because he can read your thoughts, which is really weird. And,
John, I don't give two squirts about my parents, Pete said. They sold me when I was a baby. If I ever meet them, I'll probably kill them.
Rebecca's eyebrows rose. Uncomfortable again, she scanned the bar, finding sudden interest in the various bottles of liquor on the wall.
Fred does that, too,
John said, then took a big pull of his beer.
Does what?
Kill people, John said. Or at least he used to. I'm not sure.
Pete sighed and drained his shot. It tasted like rotten apples mixed with turpentine.
John, I don't want to find my parents. I don't want to kill my parents. Thanks, but I'm good.
John suddenly leaned close, so close Pete could smell the beer on his breath. John's face furrowed into an intense scowl. Pete almost hopped off the seat, but before he could, John's blinding speed had a giant hand clutched on Pete's shoulder, fingers squeezing tight. Not tight enough to hurt, but close. Pete didn't move.
I hear you, Petey. I do. But this guy, he's good. He's mega awesome, super good. If you ever need to find out anything about anyone, let me know. I can vouch for him. Need to know where someone is? He can do that. Need to make sure someone can't be found?
John winked, a drunken, overly obvious thing that made his lip curl up and his head tilt comically to the side.
He's the dude. And if you need to find out the who with and the what forth isn't all that totally legal on the up and up and maybe a shade in the dark side, when it comes to Fred, if you play with fire, you get the horns.
John let go. The big smile returned. Pete sat very, very still. Maybe the linebacker had had one too many. Maybe five too many, but who was counting? The band finished a song and rolled right into another. Becca smiled, put her arm around John.
That's a catchy tune. Don't you think that's a catchy tune, John?
John cocked his head to the other side, squinted, listened. Becca was distracting the big man from his private investigator speech, and Pete wanted to kiss her for it.
You should dance, Pete said, and thumbed toward the floor behind them. Couples were already pairing up.
Tweety downed his sixth mag can in a single gulp. He pointed at Pete.
You should dance with Becca.
Pete grinned and shrugged. I'm afraid I barely make it to her waist. That would make dancing impossible.
Becca grabbed Tweety's hand.
Come on, John. Let's see if a linebacker can shuffle.
John sighed and swiveled off the bar stool. The two football players made their way into the throng of dancers. They stood taller than those around them. Pete watched Becca place her hands on John's shoulders as he took her around the waist. They began to dance.
Let's talk, Pete.
The voice came from his right, from Rachel Guessford. Pete turned to look at her. Several beers in, he couldn't remember why he thought she wasn't in Becca's league. Rachel Guessford was stunning. Perfect hair, gorgeous eyes, and that spectacular golden dress.
Sure, honey, Pete said. We'll talk about whatever you want.
Her brow furrowed, calling forth little wrinkles that would never have made it onto movie promotional shots.
Call me Commissioner, she said. You got it?
Pete blinked, shook his head. Had he just called the league Commissioner Honey? Time to stop drinking.
Sorry, he said. Sure, let's talk. I set up an interview for you, an important interview.
Pete rolled his eyes.
Another one? You know I have to train, right? I'm tired of talking to these third-tier regional reporters, Commissioner.
The left corner of Guessford's mouth tucked back in a wry smile.
Then you should like this, she said. It's Galaxy Sports Live.
Pete's eyebrows rose.
I'm going to be interviewed by Rindell the Blue. He's on vacation, Guessford said. The guest host is Yolanda Davenport.
Pete's eyebrows rose even further. Yolanda Davenport, maybe the most famous sports reporter there was. That brought a new level of legitimacy to Dinolition. It would also bump up Pete's visibility by a lot and would make him more appealing to advertisers. A good interview would not only help the league, it might do amazing things for his wallet.
I'll be ready, Pete said. I've got the company speak down cold, Commissioner. You can count on me.
She nodded, sipped her champagne.
I don't doubt that, Pete, but there's more this time. Davenport is interested in the league, but my sources tell me she still thinks we're a gimmick. She thinks you are the story, how you overcame your past.
Pete put both hands on the bar. He absently dragged the tip of his finger through a streak of water, or maybe beer, that had sloshed out of a glass.
My past is my business. I don't like to talk about it to anyone, let alone the millions who'll watch that interview. I don't care what you like, Guessford said. This is a huge opportunity for us, Pete. Maybe she thinks the league is a joke, but like you said, millions will watch this. You just being on set with her adds to our credibility. People want to know the stories of their heroes. The more you open up, the better it is for us.
Pete's fingertip drew lines of moisture. Maybe he was drawing a bunny, or maybe Bess. He wasn't sure.
I risk my life every match, he said.
He would resist Guessford's request, even though he already knew he'd lose.
I'll work my ass off for this league. It's all that I am. My past is mine.
She shook her head.
Not anymore, Pete. Welcome to the big time. Privacy is a thing for little people. I am a little person. The other kind of little person, Guessford said. The non-famous people. You wanted to be a star, and you got it. That comes with a cost.
There was no sympathy in her voice. Once upon a time, sentience had paid millions just to get a shot of Guessford without makeup, or perhaps naked in the comfort and privacy of her own home. Reporters had dug into her past, a past that was less than wholesome, and had talked to everyone she had ever known, had bought information from those people. Whether that information was true or not never seemed to matter as long as it would attract viewers.
You'll do the interview, she said. You'll answer everything she asks. You blow this interview, or you clam up, and you can bet the media will continue to treat us like a gimmick for years. The tournament is coming up. It could be our time to step out of the shadows of the GFL and the other leagues.
Pete looked at his water bunny slash Bess. The wet lines made no sense. He rubbed them out with his palm.
Fine, he said. I'll do it.
Gasford nodded again. There was a solemnity to that nod, a bit of shared understanding. Pete was about to become part of her club, and she knew how hard that would be.
Thank you, she said. Now, let's talk about your little temper tantrum after tonight's match.
Pete closed his eyes. He'd forgotten about his initial dread over this meeting.
Things got out of hand, he said. That's sports.
Gasford took a sip of her champagne, perfectly lipstick lips delicately pressing the glass.
We're building something classy here, Pete. You're supposed to act like a knight of old, not some punk in a drunken bar fight.
Pete shrugged.
It was good theater. Like you always say, Commish, the fans want a show. There are little people riding armored dinosaurs. That's already a good show. Add in some gallantry, and we've got a combination no other sport has. A visual spectacle that can't be matched, and sentience with personalities that everyone can look up to. I won't let this league become just another group of spoiled brats.
Pete controlled his reaction, made himself remember that Gasford wanted the same thing he did, for Dinolition to become as big as the GFL. He wasn't sure why she wanted that, but he knew why he did. There were no real athletic opportunities for people his size. No way to be looked at as elite athletes and not as stunted curiosities. Dinolition changed that, and Gasford was the driving force making that happen.
Yopat killed Tumult, Pete said. Where I come from, you don't let something like that just slide. And that little quith leader Dingleberry went for Bess's eyes. Someone had to teach him a lesson.
Her hand curled tight around the champagne flute's thin stem.
In this league, I am the one that teaches lessons, she said. That's my job. Your job is to make a great team and be the image of this league, an image I created for you that you will follow. That's not who I am. I don't care.
She took an angry sip, this time not so delicate, leaving a lipstick smear on the glass.
You are who I say you are, Pete. We're too close to success for your gutter punk antics to turn the next big thing into a damn novelty act.
He'd had about enough of her attitude.
It's too late to boss me around, he said. Like you said, I'm the face of this league, lady. I have to be myself, and if that means I'm a bad boy, so be it.
She set the flute down, stared at it, seemed to speak to it rather than to him. But there was no question as to the target of her calm, measured words.
I made you the face of this league, she said. I can make someone else the face, just as easy. I don't want to, because that will take time, something we don't have a lot of right now. And you've got it. You've got that thing that can't be taught. I believe that if you pull your head out of your ass, you are an intergalactic star waiting to explode. But you're not the only one with it in this league, Pete. There are others, younger than you, and on your own team even, that I can turn into a star. Play the role you've been given, and you'll retire a rich man. Don't play the role? Then I'll teach you a lesson. Make your choice, Pete, but if you choose poorly, I hope you still got your contacts in the Galactic Circus.
She stood and walked out of the bar, leaving Pete to stare at his drink. Hours earlier, he'd been riding a damn Tyrannosaurus Rex in front of tens of thousands of fans screaming his name. He'd been leading the Ridgebacks to a win and imposing his will on the other team. He'd been the king of the world. Now, he'd just been dressed down by a washed-up actress who could take it all away. He'd thought he was Billy Badass? No. Billy Badass had just left lipstick on a champagne flute, then walked out the door.
So, he said to his beer, looks like no more fighting then.
He turned in his chair and watched John Tweedy and Becca Montaigne spinning across the dance floor.
Oh, that was The Writer, episode number 3. Pete is in lots of trouble with Dinolition Commissioner Rachel Guessford, so subtly nicknamed Billy Badass at the end of the episode. How is Pete going to handle it as this book goes on? Well, we will find out in the episodes to come. We will be back next week for The Writer, episode number 4. And until then, we will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to The Writer, a Galactic Football League novella written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by A. Kovacs. Serialized audiobook engineered by Steve the Iceberg Rickyberg. Follow Scott Sigler on Twitter and Instagram. The handle is @ScottSigler, or join his Facebook group at facebook.com/ScottSigler. Theme music is the song Drift by Separation of Sanity off their album The Crucible, available on iTunes and at Amazon.com. Audiobook copyright, Empty Set Entertainment, 2017.